Imagine you buy a life insurance policy to protect your family, right? You sign the papers, you pay the premium for decades, and you just rest easy thinking everything is taken care of.
Yeah, you think you're totally set.
Exactly. But then, because of like two words of Latin hidden on page four, the exact wrong people end up getting the money.
It really does sound like a trap, doesn't it?
It totally does.
Yeah.
But it happens every single day when people confuse per stirpes with per capita.
Yeah, those two little phrases, they act as a, well, basically a padlock on the payout.
Right.
If you don't hold the specific key to understand how they function, you're completely locking yourself out of understanding and controlling where that wealth actually goes.
Which is just an incredibly stressful realization, honestly. So welcome to the deep dive.
Glad to be here.
Whether you are a stuck student prepping for the New Jersey life insurance exam, or maybe a newbie trying to decode the legal jargon on your own family's policy.
And just someone who loves understanding the hidden machinery of the world.
Right, exactly. This deep dive is for you. We are going to hand you that key today.
And we have an exceptionally clear roadmap to do that.
We do. Today's stack of sources comes directly from good agents and their life insurance exam prep materials.
Which are fantastic, by the way.
Oh, yeah. We're looking at their authoritative summaries, their plain English explainers, the visual blueprints, and a chunk of their actual question bank, too.
Right, so we have a lot to cover.
We do. Our mission is highly specific today. We are going to demystify per stirpes and per capita.
Demystify the Latin.
Yes, demystify the Latin. We'll explain exactly how they change who gets paid when a life insurance beneficiary dies and give you the mental shortcuts so you just never mix them up again.
And honestly, the stakes for getting this right are massive. I mean, both for passing the exam and for, you know, real world estate planning.
Oh, for sure. Honestly, I am just relieved we can decode this without needing an actual law degree.
Right.
Because anytime I see Latin in a modern contract, my brain immediately goes on the defensive. Like, what are you trying to hide from me?
It's intimidating on purpose, I think.
Exactly. But before we get to the Latin, let's establish the ground rules. Like, what actually triggers these clauses? Why do these two terms even exist in insurance policies in the first place?
So establishing the trigger is the most critical step. Because if you don't understand the timeline, the terms are completely meaningless.
Okay.
The core issue, the absolute only reason these terms exist and matter, arises in one very specific tragic scenario. And that's when a named beneficiary dies before the insured person.
Okay, so to map that out, if everyone lives a long, happy life and the insured person eventually passes away and all the beneficiaries they originally named on the paperwork are still alive and well,
then none of this matter.
Wait, really? None of it?
None of it. If everyone is alive, the money just goes to the people named on the paper. It's straight line.
Okay, gotcha.
Per stirps and per capita exist purely to answer a secondary question. Like, when a named beneficiary is no longer alive to collect their share of the money, who inherits that deceased person's share?
Right.
Where does that specific pile of money go?
So it's basically the contingency plan for the contingency plan.
Precisely. It dictates the flow of the redirected money.
Okay, that makes sense.
But before we define the actual mechanisms, we have to look at why people consistently get them wrong. The sources point out a massive trap that trips up almost everyone. It's listed as common mix-up number one.
Oh, the split equally trap.
Yes, the split equally trap. When people are rushing through their exam prep or, you know, just scanning a policy, they look at per stirpes and per capita, and their brain loosely translates both of them to mean split it equally.
Which, I mean, is a very human assumption. When you leave money to a group of people, the default desire is usually fairness.
Of course.
You just want it split equally among your loved ones.
It's a completely natural human desire, but it's incredibly dangerous in contract law.
Why is that?
Because if you only focus on the word split, you are completely ignoring the most important variable in the entire equation.
Which is?
Who is actually left alive to receive the money? The terms don't just tell the insurance company how to divide the pie. They dictate exactly who is allowed to sit at the table and ask for a slice in the first place.
Okay, let me push back on this a little bit, because I am having the exact assumption that a listener or a student might have right now.
Go for it.
If I buy a life insurance policy and I name my two kids as the beneficiaries.
Okay.
If something terrible happens and one of my kids dies before I do, doesn't the insurance company just automatically know that I would want my grandkids, like that deceased kid's children, to get the money?
You'd think so, right?
Yeah. I mean, doesn't blood just automatically inherit?
And that brings us directly to common mix-up number two from the good agent's traps list. It is the single most pervasive assumption people make.
Okay.
They assume blood relatives automatically step in to replace a deceased beneficiary by default in, like, every single case.
It just feels like the natural order of things. Family wealth passes down the family line.
It feels natural, yes, but legally, blood relatives do not automatically replace a deceased beneficiary.
Wow.
And that false sense of security is exactly why the New Jersey Life Insurance Exam, and really every insurance exam across the country, tests this concept so heavily.
Because it's a trap.
Exactly. It's not a vocabulary test. It's a logic puzzle designed to see if you know the actual rules or if you're just relying on your gut feeling of what, you know, should happen.
Wow. Okay, so if blood doesn't automatically inherit by default, how do we actually force the contract to protect that bloodline?
Well, that is exactly what the first term is designed to do. Let's look at per stirpes.
Per stirpes.
Right. It's a Latin phrase, and literally translated, it means by the branch.
By the branch.
Yeah.
Like a family tree.
Exactly like a family tree. And the visual blueprint source suggests using that exact image to anchor this in your mind.
Okay. Picturing a tree.
Whenever you hear per stirpes, picture the branches of a tree. Because under this designation, the distribution of the money follows the family branch of a deceased beneficiary.
Let's make this concrete. The sources give us a great scenario with a woman named Maria. Let's walk through that.
Sure. So Maria has a $100,000 life insurance policy.
Oh.
She names her two children, Anna and Luis, as the primary beneficiaries. And she designates the payout to be per stirps.
Got it. Two kids, $100,000. Normally, that's an easy math problem, $50,000 each.
Right. But here is the trigger event. Luis dies before Maria.
Okay.
And he leaves behind two children of his own, Maria's grandchildren. Eventually, Maria passes away. So how does the insurance company divide the $100,000?
Okay. Following the branches. Anna, the surviving child, is safe. She gets her original half, which is $50,000.
Correct.
But Luis's branch, even though Luis is gone, it doesn't get chopped off the tree. His $50,000 share drops down to the next level of his specific branch.
Exactly.
So his two kids step into his place and they split his $50,000, meaning Maria's grandkids get $25,000 each.
Perfect. Which means the wealth survives the tragedy. The key takeaway for the exam is that under per stirps, the deceased beneficiary's descendants, so Luis's kids, they step into the shoes of their parent and inherit that specific branch's share.
You know, I was thinking about a way to visualize this earlier, beyond the whole tree metaphor.
Oh, yeah. What did you come up with?
It's basically like saving a seat at a VIP dinner table.
I like that.
So Maria is hosting this massive exclusive dinner, and she has a table with two seats reserved, one for Anna, one for Luis.
Right.
Luis RSVPs, but unfortunately he passes away and can't make it. Under per stirps, the maitre d' doesn't just take Luis's chair away.
No, they don't.
That seat still belongs to Luis's family. So his kids get to come in, take his seat, sit in his chair, and eat his meal. The seat is permanently preserved for his bloodline.
That is a great analogy. That functional metaphor perfectly captures the mechanics of per stirps. The seat remains at the table regardless of whether the original guest is there.
Which makes total sense if your goal is generational wealth.
Right.
But what if that isn't the goal? What if we want to take the chair away entirely?
Then that brings us to the exact opposite approach, which is our second term, per capita.
Per capita.
Yep. In Latin, per capita translates to by the head.
By the head, like counting heads in a crowded room.
Exactly. And for your visual memory hook, the blueprint suggests picturing a row of individual stick figures.
Stick figures, okay.
Not a connected tree with descending branches, just individual people standing in a line. Because per capita means the payout is made equally among the living named beneficiaries in that specific class.
Okay, let's run the exact same Maria scenario to see the contrast. But this time, her policy says per capita.
Okay, Maria has the $100,000 policy. Anna and Luis are named. Luis dies before Maria, leaving his two kids behind.
Right.
Maria passes away. What happens when the insurance company reads the per capita instructions?
Okay, so they're going by the head. So the insurance company walks into the room and they only do a head count of the named beneficiaries who are still standing. Luis is gone, so his head doesn't count. Anna is the only named beneficiary still standing. So wait, does Anna get the entire $100,000?
She gets the full $100,000.
Wow. And Luis's kids, Maria's grandchildren.
They get zero. They do not inherit Luis's share.
Nothing.
Nothing. Under per capita, descendants do not step into the shoes of the deceased. The money stays exclusively with the living members of that named group.
You know, looking at comment and mix-up number three from the TRAPS document, I am feeling exactly what the confused student is feeling right now.
And what's that?
That feels incredibly unfair to Luis's kids.
Oh, absolutely.
I can completely see why someone taking the exam might pick the wrong answer. The phrase per capita sounds like capital or democracy.
Yeah.
It sounds like a fair, egalitarian system where everyone in the family gets a piece of the pie.
Yeah, and what is fascinating here is how human emotion completely collides with contract law.
Yeah.
Because you are having a perfectly normal, empathetic reaction. It feels wrong that one set of grandkids gets nothing while the aunt gets a massive windfall.
Exactly.
But a legal designation is a mechanism, right? It's a rigid set of instructions. It is entirely devoid of emotion.
So it just doesn't care.
It doesn't care at all. Per capita is strictly about equal distribution among the living members of a named group. It is a headcount, plain and simple.
But why would anyone actually choose that? I mean, if it cuts out your own grandkids, why does this option even exist?
Because not every life insurance policy is about passing wealth down a family tree.
No, I guess that's true.
Think about a business owner who buys a life insurance policy and names their three co-founders as the beneficiaries.
Okay.
The goal is to provide cash to keep the business afloat if something happens to one of them, right?
Right.
Well, if one co-founder dies, the policyholder doesn't want that deceased co-founder's toddler suddenly owning a third of the business's survival money.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
They only want the surviving co-founders, the people they actually knew and worked with, to get the capital.
So it is a way of restricting the money to a known circle. It prevents the money from trickling down to people the policyholder might never have even met.
Precisely. It contains the wealth to the specific individuals named on the document. If you are not alive when the headcount is taken, your share is reabsorbed and divided among those who are.
So going back to the VIP dinner table analogy, Luis doesn't show up. Under per capita, the maitre d' literally removes Luis's chair, takes his plate away, and just gives Anna a really, really big dinner.
The chair is gone. The pie is simply sliced into fewer pieces.
Man, that is a stark difference. And it makes it so clear why the exam loves this topic.
Oh, they love it.
So, if common sense and your desire for fairness are actually your enemies here,
how
do you spot the traps the test makers are setting for you?
Well, you spot them by relying purely on the mechanics, not the narrative, which means we really need to pressure test this.
Let's do it. I am going to pull a few scenarios directly from the Good Agents question bank. I will attempt to solve them to see if the logic holds up.
Go for it. Walk me through your thought process.
All right, scenario one. A policy names three beneficiaries, John, Lisa, and Mark.
Okay.
Mark dies before the insured, and Mark leaves behind one child. If this is per Sturzia, I'm picturing the family tree. Mark's branch is still alive because of his child.
Good.
So John gets a third, Lisa gets a third, and Mark's kid gets that last third. Am I passing the test?
You are passing the Stirpes portion. The wealth survives the tragedy and flows down the branch. Now, strip the chairs away, take that exact same scenario, but apply per capita.
Okay, per capita. By the head, I'm doing a head count at the door. John is standing, Lisa is standing, Mark is not.
Right.
And Mark's child isn't on the original VIP list, so they don't get a chair. The only living heads from the original list are John and Lisa. So the money gets divided by two. John gets half, Lisa gets half, Mark's kid gets zero.
Flawless. But the exam won't always make the math that clean.
Uh-oh.
Let's increase the friction a bit. What happens if multiple beneficiaries pass away and they leave behind different numbers of children?
Okay, turn up the difficulty. I'm ready.
Let's say the insured names three children, Anna, Luis, and Elena. They are designated to receive one-third each.
Okay, a third each.
But before the insured dies, a terrible accident happens, and both Luis and Elena pass away.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Anna is the only original beneficiary still alive. Now, Luis leaves behind one child. Elena leaves behind three children.
Got it.
Under per stirps, how does the insurance company distribute the funds?
Oh, this is a great trap, because my brain immediately wants to count all the grandkids and just divide everything equal.
We don't do it.
Right, I have to stick to the branches. So there are three original branches. Anna is alive, so her branch gets one-third.
Correct. Keep going.
Luis's branch gets one-third. Since he only has one child, that single child gets Luis's entire one-third share.
Yeah.
Elena's branch also gets one-third. But Elena has three kids, so those three kids have to split Elena's one-third among themselves, meaning Elena's kids each get one-ninth of the total policy.
The logic holds perfectly. Even though there are four grandkids in total, they don't get equal amounts because they're inheriting based on the size of their specific parents' branch.
Wow. Oh.
Now, what happens to Anna, Luis's one kid, and Elena's three kids if that same policy is per capita?
Hit count time. Anna is standing. Luis is gone. Elena's gone. The grandkids aren't named. So the maitre d' removes Luis's chair. The maitre d' removes Elena's chair.
And who is left?
Anna is the only named head left in the room, so Anna gets 100% of the money.
You are ready for the exam? Breaking it down step by step is really the only way to avoid the red flags.
Speaking of red flags, what are the specific trap phrases that a listener should be looking out for when they are staring at four multiple choice answers?
Yeah, the sources outline a few really common ones to watch out for. The biggest red flag is any answer choice that uses absolute language about bloodlines.
Like what?
If an answer says something like, children of the deceased beneficiary always inherit, that is an immediate trap.
Oh, because of the word always.
Exactly. As we just proved, they only inherit under per stirpes, not per capita.
Always is a very dangerous word on a multiple choice test.
Extremely dangerous.
Yeah.
Another major trap is an answer that just says the money is split equally without defining among whom.
Right, because both methods split money equally, but the crucial difference is the pool of people they are dividing it among.
Exactly. Are we splitting it equally among the surviving branches or equally among just the surviving heads?
So if an answer is vague about who is actually sitting at the table, be highly suspicious of it.
Very suspicious. And a third trap is any question that tries to mess with your timeline.
Mess with the timeline.
Yeah, remember the baseline trigger we established at the very beginning?
Right. The beneficiary has to die before the insured.
Exactly. This entire complex set of rules only matters if a beneficiary dies before the insured. If the exam question tries to distract you with a long, sad story where the beneficiary dies a week after the insured, none of this matters. The money already legally belonged to the beneficiary the moment the insured died, so it just goes into that beneficiary's estate.
That is a fantastic point. They will throw extra dates and timelines at you just to see if you lose your focus on the core trigger.
They absolutely will. They want to overwhelm your working memory. And if we look at why Good Agents provides these plain English breakdowns in the first place, it is exactly for this reason.
To cut through the noise.
Right. Traditional study materials often just give you the dense legal definition and expect you to naturally intuit how the math plays out. Good Agents builds technical authority by cutting out the fluff and giving you the mental models, like the branches and the stick figures, to process the mechanics under pressure.
Is the difference between memorizing a foreign language dictionary
Yeah.
and actually learning how to converse in that language.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I should add a crucial compliance note here, just to be completely transparent about the sources we are analyzing.
Sure.
Good Agents is a supplemental exam prep tool. It is designed to help students who are frustrated by those traditional dense materials. It is not an accredited pre-licensing provider.
Right. You still have to do the official hours.
Yes. You still need to go through your state's official channels for your required regulatory hours. Good Agents is just the tool you pull out when you actually want to understand what you are reading.
Which is usually the missing link to actually passing the test, let's be real.
Definitely.
Well, we have covered a massive amount of ground today. We have decoded the Latin, we've busted the split equally myth, we explored why someone might want to cut out their own descendants, which is still wild to me, and we navigated some highly complex exam scenarios.
We did.
So it is time to lock this in. What is the ultimate memory trick from the sources that the listener needs to walk away with?
It boils down to two simple equations. Write this down, visualize it, burn it into your brain.
Okay, I'm ready.
Per stirpes equals branch, per capita equals heads.
Per stirpes equals branch, per capita equals heads. I love it.
If you remember that stirpes keeps the family branch alive and capita only counts the living heads in the room, you will be able to solve any math problem they throw at you on test day.
But there is a deeper philosophical framework here too, isn't there? I mean, the insurance exam doesn't test these terms so heavily just to make sure you memorize some Latin flashcards.
No, they don't. They test them to make sure you fundamentally understand that an insurance contract is a rigid machine, not a human being.
Right.
The machine doesn't have empathy. It doesn't care about fairness or tragedy or what someone probably meant to do. The machine only does exactly what the words tell it to do.
That is a powerful way to look at the entire exam, honestly. And to you listening to this right now, whether you are that stuck student about to sit for the New Jersey Life exam, or maybe you are an already licensed agent looking to sharpen your saw and work a little smarter, You don't have to stop here.
No, you don't.
You can grab free quizzes and cheat sheets directly from good agents to really lock this knowledge in. Test yourself on these complex scenarios before you get into the exam room.
Because understanding the theory is one thing, but executing the logic while a clock is ticking is another entirely.
So true. But before we let you go, we have one last thing for you to think about. We've untangled the Latin, and we've established the rigid rules of the machine.
Mm-hmm.
But the real world always finds a way to throw a wrench into the gears.
It does. And this is something to mull over as you continue your studies. Throughout this entire deep dive, the absolute trigger for these terms was one person dying before the insured. The timeline had to be crystal clear.
Right.
But what happens if the insured person and the primary beneficiary are in the exact same tragic accident and they pass away at the exact same time?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. There is no clear before or after.
So how does it work?
How does the insurance machine decide whose branch or head to count when the timeline completely collapses? Whose estate does the money go to first?
That's a mess.
It is a fascinating legal puzzle. It involves something called the Uniform Simultaneous Death Act, and it is a rabbit hole you might just want to explore on your own.
The legal machine always has another contingency plan. But for today, at least, we've conquered the Latin. You don't have to be afraid of the secret language anymore.
Not at all.
When you see per stirpes or per capita, you know it is not a trap designed to confuse you. It is just a mechanical question of whether you are permanently saving a seat at the table or taking the chair away completely. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We will catch you next time.